Hello and welcome to Criminal Justice Knowledge. My name is Natalie Miller and I'm very pleased to welcome my guest today, Professor Alyssa Ferns, one of the faculty members here at Humber in the Criminal Justice Degree Program. Thank you very much for joining me today, Alyssa.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to be talking about community policing. So what is community policing exactly?
So community policing is huge. So I'm just starting with the disclaimer of the fact that it's a huge area. There's a lot of different scholars and different police services defining it and doing it and different models of it. So I'm just giving an understanding of how I understand community policing based on some of my experience, mostly from working with Toronto Police Service, but also having read on the topic. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. So when we talk about community policing, we're talking about, we could call it neighborhood-centric policing, we could call it community-oriented policing. That's all under sort of the same umbrella. And the biggest piece of it is that it comes from a different perspective than what we think of as traditional policing. So away from that enforcement, lock everyone up, and more towards a shift to working towards community needs, building trust with community, responding to what the community needs, and reducing the fear that people have with crime, and really working directly with community members. Mm-hmm. The other big difference from traditional policing is that it is much more proactive. So traditional policing being more reactive. Something's happened, we need to respond, we need to fix it, we need to, again, potentially arrest somebody, give a ticket, deal with it that way. Mm-hmm. But community policing is proactive. So it is trying to work with community even before something escalates to the level of being a crime or a violent crime, by seeing what are some of those needs, how can we fulfill those needs before something escalates. There's a little piece of broken windows theory that guides community policing. And so scholars have different views on how community policing came about, but certainly some believe that it's connected to broken windows theory, and I know it's always nice to make a theory more concrete for ourselves. So broken windows theory, you can listen to another podcast on that potentially if it's available. But the idea that low level crime and disorder in communities creates an environment that encourages more crime. So if we have a community policing approach, we are dealing with some of that lower level community needs stuff that is then preventing that crime and higher levels of crime. Mm-hmm. To make that completely concrete, an example that I've heard through neighborhood officers working in Toronto Police, they often have all kinds of examples of how their community policing approach works. So here's one example. Picture that you have a youth who is living in a neighborhood that is known to be a gang-involved neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that youth has potentially a single parent who is working double time, extra time, all sorts of shifts. So after school, there's not a lot of supervision. Mm-hmm. And the youth is has family who's been involved in gangs and walks home the same way past the park where gang members hang out. Pretty possible that that youth could be recruited to be part of a gang, mm-hmm. right? There's sort of some risk factors there. There's the potential. If you insert a neighborhood officer, a police officer who has a community approach, they are either also hanging around the park to guide, talk to, build trust with the youth, mm-hmm. or even better, they have a program for youth after school. Mm-hmm. And it's sports, it's Lego club, it's academics, mm-hmm. whatever. And now that youth who doesn't have the supervision, who's living in that neighborhood, who doesn't have many other maybe pro-social supports or mentors, is now linked to the neighborhood officers, the community, and they're now physically not hanging out at the park, and they're also sort of psychologically, mentally tied to pro-social values of doing my homework, playing with other friends, and if things are getting tough at home, or if there is that gang involvement of the family, now I can talk to a police officer about mm-hmm. what that looks like, so that they're sort of built that trust there. So that's a little bit to make it more concrete of how like a small thing could lead to gang involvement, violence, etc. Mm-hmm. But just that walk home at the park, suddenly you're not there, you're somewhere else, you're involved in your community, you're no longer going to be likely to be in a gang.
Mm-hmm. It completely changes the direction of where that particular youth might be heading or might be going.
Totally.
You kind of touched on this a little bit, but what are some community policing methods that are used to enforce this idea?
So I imagine that every police service has a little bit of their own touch. And just as we're thinking about the methods, it's also important to learn more about this. Go look even internationally, because Canada has its own way of doing it. The States has their own way. The UK, for what their community policing looks like. But in talking with Toronto police officers, some of the different things that they're doing is, the first thing is that the officers, like a neighborhood officer with a community approach, is spending time in one geographic area. So instead of being a sort of response unit where you could get sent anywhere within a division of Toronto, you are working within one neighborhood as a designated neighborhood officer. Mm-hmm. So you're getting to know your community. So just that geography piece is important. In addition, you are more available physically, so you're on foot more likely, less likely to be patrolling around in a car. Maybe you're using a bike, depending on the weather. So that's another Canadian piece, yeah. Right? Only some parts of the year do we have access to the bike, but you're outside, and then you can talk to people easier. It breaks down barriers instead of that the car. So you're physically more connected to people. A lot of communication. So giving talks at schools, going to community centers and giving public talks about maybe it's crime prevention, maybe it's anti-gang involvement, crisis support, just giving talks and being seen, and that leads into the idea of also partnering. So most of community policing involves partnering with existing organizations within neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and whether this is Crime Stoppers or Big Brothers Big Sisters or the local businesses, private, public, whatever, partnering with some of those leaders in the community who already have the trust of residents. The officers are then connecting with them as well. Mm-hmm. Again, building more trust. They're authentic members of the community because their geography is right there, and that's helping then to sort of build relationships with the community, and that's doing that crime prevention piece.
Right, so it's so having police officers not be the other and be actually part of the community, actually. So how would we measure this? Because it's a lot of person-to-person interactions. How can we measure that so we can see if it's effective or not?
Yeah, and that is, I'm really glad that we're going there, because in talking with neighborhood officers, it's one of the biggest challenges. So especially in a big service, and especially if parts of the service are still tied to the traditional style of policing where, yeah, you measure, is an officer doing a good job? Well, how many tickets have they written? Mm-hmm. How many arrests? How many warrants served, right? That sort of quantitative way of looking at job effectiveness. Doesn't work for community policing, because you're not doing those things. Those are enforcement based, and you're supposed to be doing relationship building. Mm-hmm. So it's messy, it's tricky. I'm sure some services are really doing a great job of that, and I think all services are trying to get better at that. It's the idea of how do we measure relationship building. And some of the ideas that are being discussed at Toronto Police Service is feedback from community. So community members may be writing letters about their neighborhood officer. Other ways of connecting with what the community feels is working for their community from the neighborhood officer partnerships. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the measurement is long term. So you do want to look at how many calls for service, how are changes in crime rate happening. If it's youth-related initiative, dropout rates versus graduation rates. Mm-hmm. But all of those things are so long-term, because it takes a while to build that trust. It takes a while to see a big change in a subset of a population, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't have an answer to what that looks like, just that it's messy. Yeah.
It's something that we need to be patient for, and know that having conversations, positive interactions with people works in every type of interaction, whether it's policing or not. So it's something that you're saying we need patience for. We need to really look at maybe in a decade or so if this kind of initiative
and to be tracking it, like mm-hmm. whether it's public perception with some of those quantifiable pieces. But yeah, you have to track it over a long period of time, and as things are shifting from, and I think a lot of services are shifting from traditional to community, and they have been for the past decade or more. But yeah, it's the tracking of that stuff, and it's not easy.
Yeah.
So.
But there are some examples of things that have been shown to work or still are working. What are some Canadian examples that we have of community policing?
So I know of some. I know that there are many, many out there. So a little snapshot of what does it look like in Canada in terms of community policing. So my experience is with Toronto neighborhood officers and the neighborhood policing program. And what they're, and that's been around since, I believe, 2013. And what they're really trying to do with that is not have community policing be a model of policing, but rather sort of change the whole philosophy of Toronto Police Service to come from that approach, that community building, engagement with partners, all of that. So it's the Community Partnership and Engagement Unit within Toronto Police that you would sort of seek out to get more information about that. In essence, and in a brief quick look at what it is, it's about community mobilization, it's about constructive community partners, and so that's Toronto Police Services partnering with business improvement areas, maybe it's Crime Stoppers, maybe it's Victim Services, and other neighborhood-based organizations. They have neighborhood officers who are across all 17 divisions in certain neighborhoods doing some of these methods that we just talked about. And so that's ongoing, and I do believe that they're adding more of those neighborhood officers as much as they can, because they do see the value that's happening there. Another sort of piece related to that is the idea of focus tables. And so focus stands for furthering our communities, uniting our service. And this is something that Toronto is doing and also has been doing for a few years, but they have borrowed it from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, who I believe came up with this idea of community mobilization hubs. And these hubs, it's a multi-sector community mobilization approach where you're trying to mitigate risk in neighborhoods. And that's pretty wordy, like that's a lot going on there. But it's collaborating together with different sectors from a community, and you're problem solving really complex things that are happening, right? And they're related to health and education and poverty and race and all sorts of really complex pieces of social services. But you're bringing all of those frontline professionals together, and it's literally around a table. So Toronto focus tables happen in certain divisions, and I'm not sure of the frequency. I believe it's about once a month, maybe even every 2 weeks, where those frontline people are getting together, and it could be social workers, it could be health professionals, it's police officers, and they're talking about cases of what's happening in the community that could escalate based on their risk identifiers. So it's kind of neat, because I think one of the battles in a community is if those different supports aren't talking to each other. So bringing in the focus tables in Toronto, and again borrowing it from where it's working in other places, adds a little bit of transparency and a little bit of sort of open dialogue to be able to talk about how we can support people, real people, in our community. And then, again, lots of different types of community policing. Lots of times there's different programs that are community-based for youth, because that's such an important population that you want to support to then go on a pro-social, non-crime-based path. So one of the examples that is talked about a lot is YARD. And YARD is Youth at Risk Development Program. And this is something that's working out in Alberta. Calgary Police Service is a partner within this. And they it's a community-based early intervention initiative, which means that they are targeting youth who are at risk of being gang involved. So whether it's because of family members, neighborhood, different types of risk factors. And you're talking ages from 10 all the way up to potentially 17. And these police and social workers and other family members, social supports in the community are getting together to try to reduce the likelihood of youth being mm-hmm. involved in gangs. So again, it comes to a community policing approach because it's that crime prevention piece. Mm-hmm. How can we stop the potential for an escalation to crime, gang involvement, violent crime, mm-hmm. those kinds of things?
So it's definitely something that we as a society really need to move towards, because it's showing, as you said with your examples, it is showing that there is potential, and it is helping communities a lot. Thank you so much for coming on today and speaking with us about community policing. I know there's a lot of us that want to go into policing, so this gives us an idea of what we should be striving for.
And
when
there's
you get in there.
There's a ton written on community policing, again, across, like, from international perspectives. Everyone mm-hmm. has their own take, so I urge anyone who's into this topic to go learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully making our communities happier as well as safer. Until next time, I'm Natalie Miller, and this has been Criminal Justice Knowledge.